Hi, everyone. My name is Richard. I'm a designer, and I design Android apps.
Hi, everyone. My name is Daniel, and I build Android apps.
And I'm Tor Norby. I work on the tools for developing Android apps. So in this talk, we're going to assume that you all know how to build Android apps, and we're also going to assume that you're familiar with the Android Design Guide. There was a talk immediately prior to this that hopefully most of you caught, and if not, you should definitely go check out the YouTube recording of that. So while that talk focused on the theory of the design guide, in this talk we're hoping to focus on practical implications of how to implement this and help you polish your apps. So assuming that you know you have this beautiful design that we're going to show on the slides, our goal is to help prevent you from ending up with something like this. So Richard, are you happy with how we implemented your design?
Definitely not. So before I get started on the spacing alignment details, kind of want to step back a little bit and talk about screens. There's been an insane time right now where mobile devices are just completely saturating the spectrum of screens, and it's really hard to get started on where to begin designing for these things. And in Nate's talk, or as Nate mentioned, most people usually start with whatever they have in their pocket. And it's a really good way to gain a lot of
this morning, we start with design for success.
Thinking about
an
structuring
awesome
your
overview
app
of the entire design process. How to slot the design guide into the entire development process. And we're going
to
show you some examples
you
of how to do that.
Else, with the different
next, we have,
size and density,
so you've read the design guide.
Kind of slow
now
down.
What? Which is a very practical session, which is going to show you how to take all the principles that you learned in the design guide and turn them into perfect pixels on your screen.
And the first thing is to really standardize.
One of my favorite sessions, and the one I'm most excited about, is navigation.
Measure.
Because navigation is the essential backbone of any well-designed experience. It's what makes everything make sense. It's what gives people a sense of place and keeps them grounded. So I hope I'll see you there. And then finally, we have a two-hour workshop.
Something that you should use to
which
define all of your layouts.
playing with patterns.
The framework usually
playing with patterns is also
down
really exciting because here you're going to see other developers who've actually
device.
Taken the
and
style guide
makes all of the
and used
sizes
it,
of the
used
UI
it to leverage their design and expand their design.
The
design guide is not a constraint. It's not a shackle.
So
it's a tool. It's an accelerator. It's a way to boost your experience even further. And these guys have done it, and they're going to show you how they did it and hopefully give you some good tips on that.
But they're approximately the same resolution. And when you work on a computer monitor, you can kind of see that these things are completely different because you know you're stuck on a specific density and you kind of have to hop back and forth, and it's really hard to design for. So it's really important to kind of standardize your measurement here. So this is how it works on Android. Think of it as kind of like the Android metric system. It's really hard for me because I'm an American.
Yay, metric.
And it's basically a bunch of math. So what you want to do is plot all of your devices on there and bring it back to MDPI, because MDPI is like the magic land of where one pixel is one dip. So an example of that is the Galaxy Nexus is an XHDPI device, and if you want to bring it back to MDPI, it's that ratio of 4 to 8, so it's 50% reduction. That's 1280 by 720 to 960/640 dips. So when you standardize all of these things, you can kind of see the spatial relationship between all of these. And what's great about this is it's actually using the measure that the framework is actually interpreting. And it's really, really good to engineers, developers, and designers because we can all start talking and communicating in dips. And that's really, really good so that you don't really make mistakes. And something that we use is a four-dip grid on top of everything once you've kind of standardized all that stuff. And Holo is actually, or all of the Holo widgets are actually designed on a really strict grid. And it really makes it really easy to see when things are out of whack. And here's an example of how you would kind of do this in Photoshop is just change the grid lines to four. And the advantage of that is you can actually snap a lot of these things to the 4-pixel, I mean, 4-dip grid. And you kind of see where things kind of fall into place. And it's really easy to make things really uniform and nice. And you can kind of see where all the 48-dip rhythm lines kind of land. And the great thing about this is once you standardize all this stuff in dips, you can use a stencil. And if you haven't checked it out, it's on the Android design site. And there's a bunch of good stuff in there. But once you get that set up, you can quickly make mock-ups. And a lot of the flows and stuff are really, really easy to do because you just start plopping things on the page. And once you get a lot of these components together, you can start thinking about transitioning into other screens. And it's really just an adjustment of like width and height. So this is kind of an example I like to show. This is kind of a G1 device. This is a Nexus S, a Galaxy Nexus, and a Galaxy Note. But the white part is where your content mostly lives in. And when you standardize in dips, you can really see the spatial relationship between that. So now that you've standardized it all in dips, how do you make it full res so that you can see it on the device? If you use the stencils, you can just blow it up. And in even numbers, it works out pretty well. So everything turns out pretty nice and sharp. And if you use odd numbers, you have to do a little bit of pixel hinting here and there. But a tool that we like to use is the Android Design Preview tool. It's basically a mirroring tool. So if you're on your desktop, you can select a mirror region, connect your device through USB, and preview a lot of your designs on a device. You make a lot of quick tweaks, color changes, and all that.
So a very common pitfall when you're trying to implement a UI design into actual layout XML file is to attempt to do it with nested linear layouts. So here I've added colors to a bunch of nested linear layouts you can see here. And the effect is a bit exaggerated, but you can see here that across these two columns, these are not aligning properly. And even if they did align perfectly, if I were to change the label of this checkbox here in some other locale, suddenly they would no longer line up. And likewise, you can see that we don't actually have proper baseline alignment across these two columns here that are separate linear layouts. So what you should do instead is to use a more powerful layout. So for example, relative layout lets you express these constraints. So I'm just going to quickly drag some things in here to show you. So I'm going to put in, I'm going to try to reproduce what I have up here quickly. So we put a label down, and then I can place a button next to it, and I can express that these should be baseline aligned. And likewise, the checkbox next to it is supposed to be baseline aligned with the button. And then we have a radio button right below it. And then there's a checkbox over here on the left that's supposed to be below the radio button, and so on. So basically, you can express across your whole layout constraints, and the layout manager will make sure that these things don't actually they actually adjust based on the labels and everything in the layout. This is also very good for performance, by the way. So it's not the only reason why you would do this. We're also working on a layout called Grid Layout, which is shipping with Ice Cream Sandwich. But it's also been backported, so you can use it in older applications. And the advantage of Grid Layout is that it's a very simple to understand user model. It's what newspaper editors have used for centuries to basically lay out the design, with rows and column spans and everything. And this is used, I think, for the lock screen and various other stuff in Android now. The tool support is not done, but I just want to show you a few things that relate to the design guide. So we're working on adding these spacing guidelines, so you can see that, hey, you probably should have a margin, and it's, likewise, we're trying to offer you some suggested spacing. So what we want to do here is to help you enforce that visual rhythm that the design guide tells you to use. So this is not done, but we're going to try to put those red lines into all of our existing layouts. So avoid linear layouts for any kind of nesting of your large layouts, but they do have their place. If you are creating a button bar, the linear layout is what you have to use. It's the only way to actually get that correct proportional distribution of space. And another common area for it is if you're doing a tablet layout. So you want to say, put 30% of the content on the left and then 70% for the remainder. That's when you use a relative layout. There is one pitfall, though, and I'm going to show you that now. So here I have two buttons, A and B, and they are supposed to be distributed evenly, 50-50. Looks great, right? Well, it turns out that weights do not work the way you might think. They are not distributing the space of the whole layout. They are distributing the space of the remainder of the layout after you've assigned the intrinsic sizes of all the widgets. So right now, these buttons happen to have the same intrinsic size, so the space gets divided evenly. But look what happens if I change the label of button B here to something longer. Suddenly, my even distribution ends up not looking even. And the reason for that, again, is that we now have more intrinsic size on one of them. And the workaround is very simple, but maybe not intuitive. What you do is you set the width of all the children to zero. The width is only used for this intrinsic computation. And when you have weights, it'll use all of the weights for that remainder of the sum of zero. So if I click on our distribute weights evenly button, that's going to do precisely that. It's going to actually set the width to zero, as you can see. So it's very subtle, but it's one of those things that can look not exactly right. You know, you thought it was 30%, turns out it's wider because something in there was wider. So that's just a little small pitfall to look out for.
Switch. So on the topic of stencils, another great thing that this allows you to do is to really make your app yours. And Holo was always built to be extensible with third parties, and there's a lot of opportunities to express through customization of certain parts. And Holo is really the bones to start your application. It's really up to you to make it special. It's really about spacing and metrics and a few hints of color and character. So a good place to start is with themes. We have light, dark, and light with a dark action bar. And what I like to do is really start out with the action bar since it's the most prominent bit of UI. And it has a lot of impact here. So I like to look at color and the contrast and what that really sets the tone for your application to be. So you can kind of get a feel for, if you pick a really dark thing, it's kind of more media-centric, or white, it's like a productivity app. So here's kind of some quick tweaks on color alone, and it really changes the feel of the application. There's a lot of other places where you can do that. Of course, the split action bar tabs and a bunch of other places and backgrounds. But when you look at the action bar, this is kind of the easy thing to do, is to change the background color. But the thing that you need to keep in mind is that there's a highlight and a shadow. And you need to adjust that accordingly to whatever color you've selected. And you can play with material qualities here a bit more, but just don't go too nuts. The action bar also allows you to put a different app branded icon here. So you can use like a longer logo type, different shapes and that stuff. You don't have to use your app icon. But just make sure it doesn't really clash with the action bar itself. And a thing to note is there's a bunch of states associated when you press. Make sure that doesn't clash with the color you've selected, too. And we have sort of this idea of making users powerful with a lot of our states. So the press state is kind of the highest elevated color, and normal is just the bare geometric form, and then there's stuff in between. So if you do customize some of these things, make sure to respect some of those rules.
Thank you. So Rich said that you can recolor the whole application, and it can have a very powerful effect. So I did a little exercise, and I changed the color of this application to red. And you can see it immediately feels like a completely different kind of application, has a very different feel for it. You can do that with the whole application. The problem, however, might be that we have a lot of controls, and if you forget one, it might feel a little off. So this is an example of the editor, and what I forgot to change is the blue underline of the text is not changed here, and it sticks out a little bit. So you can do, you can recolor everything in your app, but it can be a little bit of work, especially because we have a lot of controls. And now multiply those by all the different densities that we provide and all the different states. It can be a lot of work. It can certainly be done. What we recommend you to do is to change the main screen of your application. YouTube is a very good example. And this screen, it is mostly the default style that we use in Holo, but there are three things that were customized. The HD button has a red underline. The video, the thumb that used to track in the video is red. And also the tabs are red. So this makes the whole application feel much, much more like a native YouTube app, but it also feels like a native Android app, even though not that much was really changed. Now, when you get your designs from your designer, which I would hope you have a designer, you usually get static images. But keep in mind, views have states. And every time when I touch a view and it doesn't react in any way, I kind of like the sad trombone that you heard before, this is kind of what's playing in my head every time when I see that. Keep in mind there are states. When I push an item, I want to see a press state. I want to see that the control is really responding to my touches. So you see the tabs already have two states. Now if you add the press states, you have two states more. So we're already at four states. Now if the user has a keyboard and the user can focus the item, you have two additional states. So we already have six different states on an item. So this is what those look like. So we have normal, focused for keyboard, and pressed. The way how the focused is designed, focused is an outline. When you push enter on the keyboard, it is just filled out. So the combination of focused and pressed looks exactly the same as pressed. So you might think we would need eight states because we have three different flags, but in fact it's only six. So now let's say you get all of those bitmaps from your designer. How do you tell Android that you want to use those in a view? So let's see how we can build a selector. This is what solves this problem. So a selector is a set of conditions that is evaluated from top to bottom. So let's look at an example. We have pressed equals true and selected equals true. We say in that case, we want to show this bitmap. Now, if that condition is not met, Android will fall back to the next line. Pressed equals true, and no test for selected is essentially a test for selected equals false because we already tested for selected equals true. So now that we have the pressed states, we can do the two focus states. Again, we have selected and unselected. And notice how the order here is important. If I moved the focused before pressed, I would not get the right combination state, which is focused and pressed together, which should look like pressed. If I moved them at the top and I push enter on my keyboard, I would not see any effect. So now with those, then all that's left are the regular states. So selected equals true and the fallback case where no special condition is met. So now that you've identified those conditions, you put that in an XML file. So you create a selector file and you store it in the drawable folder. And then you can use this drawable just like you use a regular bitmap. And I think we're also working on getting those kinds of transitions into our tools. So now that we've talked about the bitmaps, it's also important to keep the shape of an item. You want to communicate the shape. So this is a screenshot of the clock application. If you push that alarm on an ice cream sandwich phone, you will notice there is no visual feedback. And so you don't really have a direct, you don't get feedback as a user when you're pushing the item. In Jelly Bean, we fixed that. There's a nice blue outline, and this has a couple of advantages. The first one is you get immediate touch feedback because the item is only responding when you release your finger, but now you already get visual feedback when you touch the item. It makes the phone feel more responsive. Another advantage is you see the outline of the control. So next time when the user pushes, they have a little more confidence what exactly the size of the item is because you only see the text otherwise. And it's a little more relaxed to tap. And the last one is you know exactly what you're actually pushing because you see the control and you see exactly this corresponds to set alarm. So this is something very important. If the user just taps, nothing is happening, it's always a little bit of a challenge to figure out what the app will do next. So in many cases, you don't want to supply your own bitmaps. You just simply want to use the system's default. But if you have a button, you don't have to set anything. Android will already do the correct thing. But sometimes you have a more complicated situation. You might have a nested view hierarchy, and you maybe want to push the press states and those kinds of things on a more higher level control. Or you build your own custom view. In that case, this is what you need to know. Selectable item background. If you set this on any view, it will get the system standard behavior. So how can you test all of this? It's actually very simple. but I've seen many people do this wrong. When you push an item, actually you should hold it and you should have a look, what is the real outline that you're seeing here? So if I touch the bitmap, I should see a rectangle. Make sure the shape is correct, make sure the color is correct. And also if you have blue on blue, it's usually very hard to see. So push and hold. Now how do you test keyboard support? Well, one option is, of course, you get a device with a keyboard. There are a couple on the market. If you don't have a keyboard, there's a very useful thing that you can get, and that is a Bluetooth keyboard. A Bluetooth keyboard works with every Android device out there, almost every Android device, and it's one of the most useful things that you should have in your toolbox. You can use this with every device. You can make sure that keyboard support works.
On to icons. So with iconography, it's actually one of the most challenging things for developers to do because it requires some artistic ability.
What are you trying to say?
So we have actually kind of done a lot of stuff for you. And in the icon kit, there's actually all of the core icons and app menu icons in HoloDark, HoloLight, and all resolutions. So if you've actually pulled something from framework-based core res, make sure you find the equivalent in here, not some random thing. And also really be aware of our core system icons. There's a sheet inside the pack that explains all of its uses and examples. Don't reinvent them. And if you're going off the rails and need to do something, this is all of our vector sources. It's also included in the pack. And this is a good place to start because you can kind of see the form and the shapes that we've used. And a good place where I like to start is to plot a bunch of stuff that we've already done and draw kind of like these grade school lines, kind of like learning cursive over again. It helps you really to optically balance these things and see which one's the odd one out. And the idea here is to really get most of the mass in the center box. It's not really about getting it mathematically perfect in the box. And this is kind of a sample sheet that we've done in Gmail. And the good thing here is that if you put everything together, you can spot inconsistencies and other weird artifacts that you might have not seen before. And the general approach here is kind of the opposite of laying stuff out. You want to get the highest resolution that you possibly can. So fidelity matters, and then fill in the holes downstream when you can. And the way it actually works in the framework is it always tries to get the highest possible. If you don't supply the target density that your device is running on, it'll pull the next one up. If there's none above that, it takes the lower one and blows it up. And you don't want your assets blown up.
All right, so we have a few features in the tools to help you with your icon work. So the first one is the integrated asset studio. So if I go to create a new icon, Android icon set, you get into this wizard. And so, for example, creating a launcher icon, you can go in, pull up a project logo, and paste it in. And this lets you, you know, create different shape treatments and things like that. And if you already have an HDPI version of your icon, you don't actually have to provide all these other scaled versions. The platform will do that for you. But this is more where you want to make sure that you have the right shape, or possibly if you have a really high-resolution image. This is really useful when you're trying to create other types of icons. So let's take a look at notification icons. So here I have a paste icon. Let's say this is my notification icon. I want this to appear as a notification. If I go through the wizard now, and I point it to this graphic. Actually, I forgot to do something. I have to select an older project. So let me make sure that I choose this one. This one's targeting older platforms. This is a very important point I want to make. So let's go create our notification icon again. I'm going to choose an image. And OK, I'm obviously making a mistake here. What I wanted to show you here, unfortunately, this will create an icon that will look correct across the different platforms. So in pre-Gingerbread, your notification icons needed to have a dark background and a light foreground. In Gingerbread, they turned gray, and as of Honeycomb, they're supposed to be white. Now, because the projects I'm targeting here are only targeting Honeycomb, this wizard knows to only generate the white version. But what I wanted to show, and I don't know what mistake I made here. What? Oh, that's right. I closed the YouTube project. Duh. This was from my demo yesterday, and I was like, oh, I'll just clean this up. It'll start faster. All right. Let's try it again now. I'm sorry about this. I'm glad we have smart people in the front row. Here we go.
Yay.
All right. So now I'm just choosing text. I'm not going to waste more time on this. But you can see now I get different versions of the icons from the, you know, version 9 and up, version 11 and up, and the pre-version. So this is really useful because if you're just sitting in Photoshop, you might not think of this, and then your icons can look out of place if you're targeting older or newer versions of Android. The other thing I want to show you is that we have a lint tool which will help you look at your icons and make sure you're not making big mistakes. So I run lint here only focusing on the icon things. And we can jump, for example, down to the icon duplicates check. And here you can see it's saying that the following unrelated icon files have identical content. So there's one called Droidman Closed and one called Droidman Open, and they are identical. Clearly, that was not intentional, right? They should have probably had a different state, and so either the graphic designer checked it in the wrong files, or maybe we made a mistake when we put it into the repository. So the icon check lets you look for that. It also looks for things like the spacing. So you're supposed to have some padding around your icons, and we, for example, know that dialogue icons are supposed to be 48 by 48 dips, and here they're 32 by 32 dips. So this checks for a wide variety of issues, like putting, you know, bitmaps in the no DPI folder and things like that. So, I mean, the drawable, not drawable density folder. So lint is definitely useful for checking your icons as well as various other polish issues.
We saw the dynamic behavior of selectors. We saw icons. We talked about spacing. Now, at some point, you want to put all of this together. And you might have heard about the Fragment API and maybe never bothered to learn it, because something that many people wonder is, why would you learn it? You can simply use container views, and they do a lot of the things that that Fragments also do. I would like to show why using the Fragment API can be a really, really valuable tool. But before I do that, I want to show how we used it in the Systems Context app to make it aware of multiple screen sizes. So here you see the context application on a 10-inch in portrait. You see there is a list on the left and there are the details on the right. This is what we call a two-pane UI. When we switch to 7-inch, we have essentially the same layout. It has a few tweaks, but again, it's the list on the left and the details on the right. Now, on phone, it's a very different layout. We show the list in full screen. When I tap an item, I'm being sent to the detail screen. Now, of course, as a programmer, I don't want to re-implement my app twice. So what I want to do is I want to say that this and this part, that those are equivalent. So how can I use that? How can I do that? So if I don't know about the Fragment API, a straightforward implementation would be simply to use a container view and activities. So then it would look something like this. So you have a list activity, and you put a very big list view inside. You have a detail activity, and you put a big detail view inside. Now, this is the phone. Now, once we go to tablets, well, you reuse those two views, put the list view on the left, put the detail view on the right, and you put it all in a common activity. You might reuse the list activity, or maybe you create a completely new activity, like two-pane activity. So this looks all fine. No need to learn about fragments, right? Well, there's one problem, and that is, at some point, you want to add functionality. So let's say we want to launch the camera. So when the user clicks this icon, we want to send him over to the camera, allow him to snap a picture, and then use the picture. Now, the picture comes back on an activity result from the intent that we've sent, which is great, except that onActivity result is something that is implemented by the activity. So a detail activity has to implement onActivity result and then forward the result back to detail view, which is good. But we also have to do the same thing now in listActivity because we're not hosted by detail activity anymore. So we need a lot of boilerplate code to just send this in. And activities are not the only reason. There are a few more things. For example, option menus are usually you want them to be handled inside of the view because the view knows the state. So for example, if you have a delete button or a delete menu item, you might want to have this disabled in certain places. The view knows about this, not the activity. Lifecycle, on resume, on pause, data fetching. You want to load data from a database, you want to persist settings. Those kinds of things, they all live in the activity, but they don't really belong there. You want them to be part of the view. So We actually tried this. In early Honeycomb, the context application is a good example. It was implemented like this. And it was a lot of boilerplate code. We had to forward things from the activity down into the views. And every activity had to know what kind of things the view does. So if I add a new functionality to the view, I have to change two different activities to support that. So we needed something better. And that is why fragments were invented. So fragments basically, if you think about them visually, they basically take the place of the full screen view. So in the phone layout, you would use a full screen fragment for your panes. And on the tablet, again, one pane is one fragment. Now, this solves many of those problems. So, for example, option menus can be handled by fragments. You can get the result from the activity that you called to get the camera result. You can get that back in the fragment. Also, you have lifecycle events. It is very much like a simple activity. If you go through with this, you will end up with activities that are very, very thin. You probably have seen that activities tend to get really messy and big. Once you do something like this, your activities will be simple, fragment, like they will host fragments. They will configure fragments, respond to intents, and coordinate how the fragments communicate with each other. But apart from that, most of your logic will live inside of the fragment. So this is not the only thing that you can do with fragments, but I think it is the most powerful. And it really helps you to make things easier. So great. So once we know how we can use fragments to assemble different panes, you then wonder, what should the frames look like? And well, you probably all have a Nexus 7 by now. The Nexus 7 is an interesting device. A 7-inch screen is somewhere between a phone and a tablet. So you might wonder, what should it look like? Should it behave more like a phone, or should it more behave like a 10-inch tablet? So we tried both. So here is an example of what the phone application looks like if, sorry, the people application looks like if we make it behave more like a phone. So this is a full screen list. It actually looks decent. Could maybe tweak it a little bit, make the pictures a little bigger, but it mostly is good. Now, when we open a contact, it still looks pretty good because the 7-inch device is very narrow and it feels very much like a phone in portrait. Once we look at landscape, things get a little uglier. So here, like 3/4 of the screen are not used. Similar in the detail screen. This one could probably be tweaked, but the list is really a problem. Now, you might say, hey, why not simply use the best? Let's try the other approach. So this was the single pane approach. Let's try the dual pane approach. So it looks really good on landscape. But if we try to do the same thing in portrait, things get very cramped. So the left pane doesn't really have a lot of space and the right one either. So here's an example of a long name, and it's clipped. So you can't really read it. So now at this point, you might be tempted to say, hey, why don't we combine the two? So in portrait, we use the phone layout. And in landscape, we use a two-pane UI. There's a problem with that. So let's look at the portrait screen. And now we rotate it into landscape. So this looks good. Now we rotate back. We're back into the list. So this looks good so far. But if we start from the detail view, we would rotate into the exact same screen. And now when the user rotates back, where do you rotate back into? So the naive implementation would probably go back to the list. But now what happens is that the user might even accidentally just rotate the device and you're suddenly lost. He's not in the same screen anymore. And they have to navigate there again. Rotations can really be like you might be using your tablet in the car. There's a little pothole, and suddenly your device rotates for a second. So this is something that you should try to prevent. What we try to achieve is we try to optimize the screens. For example, the left side in the people application, we made it so that it works. We removed the pictures there, but we keep the pane configuration. So this is a concept that we call rotational stability. So the number of panes should not change while an application is running. It should only be based by the physical size of the device. So that is rotational stability. So how can this all be tested? So as you know, Android devices come in a lot of different forms. So one thing, obviously, is you could buy all of them. First of all, thank you. It can get very expensive. And we think there is a cheaper and, in some ways, better way. So one thing that you can do is If you have a big device, you can always simulate a small device inside of it. If you run this command, which works on, I believe, Honeycomb and up, you can run a zoom in something like a 9-inch mode. It is now suddenly a 4:3 device. You have a different aspect ratio. You have a different screen resolution. And you can do a lot of development in there. We actually, at some point, developed a lot of the 7-inch work on a device like this, on a modified zoom. You can even go further. You can take a Nexus 7 and make this run like a phone. You cannot make phone calls with it, but it works like a phone. You get the single-pane UI and so on. There's some limitations to this. First of all, you cannot change the density of a device. So if you have an HDPI device before, it'll still be an HDPI device afterwards. And also, Android does not natively support changing the resolution at runtime. So there are some caveats that some applications might crash. The most common one that you will run into if you do something like this is actually the system bar. So worst case, you lose access to the back and the home button. There are some ways to get around that. One is you don't switch between device buckets. So if you change a 10-inch device to a 9-inch device, you'll be fine. If you change a 10-inch to a phone, suddenly the system has to reconfigure so much that it usually doesn't survive it. Another way is, if you have a Bluetooth keyboard, those keyboards have back and home buttons, then you can use your device again, of course, for development. And there's also a way out of this, which is pretty useful, because then you can use your device again.
So another alternative to buying hardware is to use the emulator. And hopefully you saw the tool stock yesterday on some of the work we've done to make it faster. And with the emulator, you can create virtual devices. So you can basically create any hardware configuration you want. Pick the resolution, pick the density, and then you can test it. And as we showed yesterday, we're working on a feature where we also are pre-populating the list with a bunch of existing hardware. So if you know you want to target a particular device, we can basically look up the resolution for you, and you can then test it. Now, in many cases, you don't even need to run the layout to see that there's a problem. You can actually do some tweaking as you're designing it. So in the layout editor, we have this configuration bar where you can very quickly see how something is going to look in landscape mode, and you can go and make tweaks to it. You can also check across different languages, so you can see what something's going to look like with the different message catalog, for example. So a feature we're working on for an upcoming release is going to let you sort of get to do this in parallel. So I can actually turn on a preview of all the screen sizes. And as it's doing this, I can then make edits, and I can instantly see that, for example, if I were to add this logo, this does not look good in a 2-inch QVGA screen, but it looks okay, from a Nexus 1 and up. And I can use this to not just check screen sizes. I can also check across locales, for example, and see, how this will look with different languages and so on. So when we're done with this, this will hopefully be an even better way to very quickly make sure that your layout doesn't have some big snafu in a particular locale or hardware configuration or orientation that you care about.
Isn't this awesome? So the last thing I want to mention is target SDK version. So target SDK version is an attribute that you set in your manifest. It's a very important number to set, but we've noticed some developers don't really know what it is. A very common misconception is that target SDK version is the minimum version of the SDK that your application needs to run. But it isn't. There is another one, and it's called, surprisingly, min SDK version. That is the minimum version. There's also max SDK version, which is the maximum version, which we usually recommend not to use, because if the user gets an update of their device and they're really happy, suddenly they can't get your app anymore. So, but what is target SDK? So target SDK is the highest version of the SDK that you have tested against, the highest version that you're aware of. If you set this to something that is older, Android will put you in a compatibility mode for all of the things that we change. So for example, if we change the color of notifications, there is a good chance that if you set the target SDK version to something too low, that your notifications will look out of place. I built a little application here with target SDK version 8. And you can see there are some things that are wrong here. First of all, there's this menu button that we don't really want anymore. Also on the right corner, there's a zoom button, because, and zoom with a Z. So this is pixel doubling mode. This is intended for applications that are not aware of tablets. And lastly, this dialogue looks really old. This is gingerbread style, and also the yes button is on the left side, but it's the confirm button, which should be on the right now, which we changed with ice cream sandwich. So now if I change the target SDK version of this application, it'll suddenly look much, much better. The menu button is gone. Instead, we have an action bar. We have an overflow button up there. The zoom button is gone, and also the dialog looks much better. OK button is on the right. Cancel is on the left. So the one number that is important that I would like to end with is your new friend, this number. This is the target SDK version of Jelly Bean. If you set this, we will not apply any kind of compatibility checks and, any kind of compatibility modes, and your application will feel like a really new application. And to wrap it up.
Yeah, so to close, for me, do the dips. and really use the Hollow widgets and stencils as a building block to make your application sing.
Yeah, so from my side, please make your UI items interactive. If you press an item, there should be a press state. If not, think of the sad trombone. Also, use the fragments. They really help you to turn your application parts into components that you can reuse and reassemble in different ways. And 16.
For me, I would say learn how to use the tools. You know, we've only, I wouldn't say scratched the tip of the iceberg, but I think I mixed some metaphors, but I've only shown the tip of the iceberg in terms of what we have in the tools. You know, consider yourself tradespeople. You want to really learn how to use the tools, learn the key bindings, learn what features are available. It's really going to come back and pay off in spades. I think the thought we want to leave you with is 16, right?
Thank you.